The Big Picture, a Christian insight into the world of movies, television and pop culture with magazine editor Ben McKechin and scriptwriter Mark Hadley. A Bible Society Australia production, sharing the light of God's Word into every corner of your world.
I'd like to thank the Academy. I'm Ben McKechin.
And I'm his petite starlet co-host, Mark Hadley. Welcome to episode 48 of The Big Picture for the week beginning February 28. And coming up on today's show, the glitter, the glamour. Well, actually, no glamour to speak of, but it's our Oscar show.
Yeah, you should stay tuned to hear our predictions about who deserves to win as we preview all of tomorrow's Academy Awards action.
Plus, our top Academy Award reviews, yet another soundtrack game, and Oscar's top five crimes, according to me.
According to you, when is Oscar ever committed a crime, Mark? We're about to find out, but much later in the show. Yeah, we're going to go Oscar bonkers this week, Mark.
What's the appropriate adjective for Oscar behaviour?
I don't know, but we're going to talk about the 88th Annual Academy Awards, which very conveniently they chose to put on just after our latest show.
Which I think it's nice thing that gives us that perfect setup. It was almost too perfect.
Now, before we get to what's happening this week, which is basically the Oscars, but there are a few other things around.
One or two.
There are. At cinemas this week, 13 Hours, The Secret Soldiers of Benghazi. Have you seen this, Mark?
No, I have not.
Are you very curious about this?
I am not.
I definitely am. It's from Michael Bay, the guy who made Bad Boys, Armageddon, Transformers, all this kind of movies. But this looks like a
great documentary credentials.
This looks like a serious movie about an attack on the American embassy in Libya a number of years ago, where six soldiers were sent in to rescue people. Michael Bay is making this movie.
I know.
I'm intrigued.
I'm intrigued because I want to see whether he can do it without blowing stuff up
or transforming.
Well, look, I've got some good news. TV is funny again. Oh. So that's some great news. Maybe in case you haven't spotted it, the seventh season of Parks and Recreation has started on the Seven Network. And the reason you probably haven't spotted it is Seven has put literally one of the funniest shows on television at 11:20 at night on a Thursday. So just in case you're wondering, look, set the DVRs. Well worth the effort.
Crimson Peak is out on DVD and Blu-ray. We saw this late last year. We expected a lot from it, and then we ended up shrugging our shoulders and yawning most of the way through. It was quite a straight-ahead ghost tale of really weird siblings and ye olde locations. Crimson Peak is out now. My recommendation, and I think yours, Mark, is don't bother.
Yeah, find somebody else's present somewhere else. And look, you might not have noticed, but it kind of leads slightly into the show. The 88th Academy Awards are on the Nine Network.
Oh, are they? Someone mentioned that about a minute ago.
Yeah, live from tomorrow. You can pretty much pick them up from 12:30, or if you're like most of us, you'll wait until everything's boiled down. The 9:55, that's 5 to 10, people. 5 to 10, they'll be running a sort of an edited version of the Academy Awards. Get your best frocks out, settle down with some snacks, prepare yourself for a lot of pasted smiles and inane speeches, and there's some stuff about films as well.
Are you the kind of guy that doesn't like to hear what happened during the day, given there's a time difference with Australia and America?
Are
you
I am
the kind
that of guy.
Oh, yeah? Whereas I like to just go to IMDb and just keep clicking on and see who won. I love cutting to the chase.
I am the guy who sort of like runs down the road with his fingers in his ears and his head sort of staring straight down. That's why I'm also involved in a lot of car accidents. Slightly different thing.
Steer clear. Now, before we get to our first now showing choice on this Oscar special of The Big Picture, I have a true or false to pitch to you, Mark, and everybody else. Like we do every week, we pick a fact or possible not fact from film history and we reveal it to everybody and ask whether it's true or false. And this one is Oscar related. So, officially named the Academy Award of Merit, the statuette that is better known by its nickname Oscar. It's named after Oscar Thomas, the first president of the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences. Is that true or false?
I'm going to think about that because it sounds too easy. Okay.
Sounds too easy.
Is Oscar named after Oscar?
Or is it not?
Oscar,
yeah.
Is what you're saying.
Why would they not name it after Oscar?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know anything about Oscar.
We'll come back to that after our first now showing choice for this week. It's kicking off our Academy Award coverage. Our review is of one of the biggest Oscar hopefuls, biggest Oscar contenders this year. Most people, but when they first heard about the title of this film, Mark, they said, what the what? What? But The Revenant has gone on to create all manner of fuss with critics and audiences. Starring Leonardo DiCaprio, Oscar-nominated Leonardo DiCaprio, it's the story of a fur trapper who's left for dead in the American wilderness, whose thirst for revenge fuels his will to live.
My son.
The proper thing to do would be to finish him off quick.
He's to be cared for as long as necessary.
I understand.
Get away! Help!
The Revenant is basically an unexpected box office sensation. It was the big contender against Star Wars, The Force Awakens, but no one really expected to do fantastically well, not against a juggernaut like that. And then The Revenant goes and knocks Star Wars off its top spot in most markets around the world 3 weeks into release. To date, The Revenant has earned about $381 million at the box office, and given its performances in award shows, it's possibly going to do a lot better yet. It's a tidy return against a budget of less than a third of that. Okay, yeah. So 3-to-1 investment, got to be happy with that. On its opening weekend, it actually returned 70% more tickets than the distributors expected. You know, as far as metrics go, that's pretty amazing. The Revenant has received generally positive reviews across the board. If you're into stuff like Rotten Tomatoes and things, it's at 7.9 out of 10, and Metacritic gives it a 76 out of 100.
That's pretty strong.
Yeah, yeah. Most people have praised DiCaprio's rather silent but committed performances as the hunted, starving, severely wounded, bear, mauled woodsman Hugh Glass.
Guy who drags himself through ice for about an hour and a half.
Who's determined to track down the man who killed his son and left him for dead whilst dragging himself through ice for yet another hour and a half. Look, DiCaprio won the Golden Globe for the Best Actor with The Revenant. The film also picked up Best Director and Best Motion Picture for the Golden Globes. There's also a host of Screen Actors Guild, Critics' Choice Guilds. But in fact, it's so loaded down with awards at this point that there's real danger of capsize. The Revenant has also been nominated for 12 Academy Awards for tomorrow night.
12? Couldn't muster up 13, Revenant.
I don't know what it's thinking it's doing. Frankly, poor effort. Look, The Revenant is a film that many people have heard about already, so we're kind of not doing the traditional review. But if you haven't understood the impact of it so far, it's a big name for this year in film.
But why is it enjoying such the impact that it has, especially going back to that title, which just sounded like a movie that people would keep their distance from? And it did seem like, even from the trailer, it seemed a bit like this is an art house special that could potentially break out, but it's really done that in a massive way. But why do you think that's the case?
Yeah, look, you're right. It sits across things. So it is basically an art house film. It is about the deep, cold center of America during settlement, not even at an interesting point. You know, to be honest, it's not like there's no revolutions going on or anything like that. It is a thrilling tale because it basically combines some real action elements, like quite possibly the most brutal bear attack sequence ever filmed.
Yeah. Yes, it is.
Yeah, and Indian attacks and things like that, with really a deep-seated examination of the motivations of the human heart. So it is crossing people who might normally go, I'm a thinking film person, with action film people, and it's just found that sweet spot.
Is it going to leave us with...
Oh, it's got Leonardo DiCaprio, which seems to get a lot of people.
Now, a bit later in the show, we're going to get to our own Oscar predictions, where we're going to open our own envelopes from each other, and we're going to read out each other's predictions in categories like actor and film and director. We'll get to that a little bit later in the show. We'll talk more about Leonardo DiCaprio then. Although you might want to talk about it right now, because my next question for you is, what do you think The Revenant's going to leave us with? You mentioned bear attack. You mentioned diving into the cold, dark heart of America. Is that what we'll be left with, or is there more?
I think... it's going to leave us with, you know, kind of memorable performances. So, like, this will probably get reflected in the Academy Awards. Tom Hardy as a villain, you know, is particularly well done. Leonardo DiCaprio reminds us of that whole dark heart thing going, and also the determination of the human heart. It's going to put Revenant into the vocabulary.
Yeah. You know, for those who we don't won't know, run a mile from Revenant.
Yeah, for those who don't know, and here's our helpful little handy definition, a Revenant means a ghost that won't stay dead. So basically a spook of some form that's sort of, you know, chasing the living. But I think what it's going to do ultimately is it is going to clang with the audience.
What do you mean? Really?
Yeah,
quite liked the movie, did you not?
I love it. But I think there's the message. It's great for critics, this film. And this is what the Academy Awards, amongst other things, do.
That's critics, me and my critics' voice.
Critics look at stuff and go, wow, that's fantastic.
What do critics like about it?
Well, critics like the performances. To be honest, I think, you know, we'll get onto this a bit more with the Academy Awards. I think there's going to be a reflection because there's a few people who have been hanging on for an Academy Award who are going to probably get rewarded.
Does their surname rhyme with DiCaprio?
But look, I think the interesting reason it's going to clang with audiences is because it is a revenge plot. And the typical cycle of a revenge plot is, despite all odds, the good guy will get his against the bad guy. Now, I don't want to give away the ending. That to some degree happens, but not the way people think. In fact, what the ultimate message of the film is not you should go out and get revenge, but rather you should leave this to God. You know,
and you think that's the bit that's going to clang with people?
This is the thing that's going to clang because...
that people will be wanting something far different from the film.
I think people will be getting the unexpected. And that often... You don't often get big returns based on the unexpected. Sometimes you do, you know, like Sixth Sense. If you haven't seen that, I won't spoil that for you either. But, you know, the twist and the tail, sure, that can be good. But this is a very classic revenge plot. And yet multiple times through the film, whether it be in the voice of Native Americans or whether it be in the voice of DiCaprio himself or people who are observing from the side, revenge is something that's supposed to be left up to God. Only he can actually deliver it properly and in a balanced way. And when we deliver it, we actually diminish ourselves. Now, I don't think that's the popular view of bad guys should get what's coming to them. I think instead it's, you know, trust your own hand, not trust to God. And that to me, I think is a really interesting thing. But that will be left, you know, when people think about that and they'll have to think about the plot line, I think they will see that that is just not where that we normally go. So for me, that's not a bad thing to leave people with.
If you haven't yet seen The Revenant, expect to hear a lot more about it in the next couple of days because it is well expected to, if not dominate, pick up a number of Oscars.
It should get at least Best Bear performance.
Finally, the bears get acknowledged. Revenant is still at cinemas all over the place. It stars Leonardo DiCaprio, Tom Hardy, and Brooklyn's own Domhnall Gleeson, and it's rated MA15+ for strong bloody violence, themes, and sexual violence. Now, Mark, before that now showing segment that you just brought us on The Revenant, I posed a true or false question about the Oscars. And so tell me whether I'm telling you the truth or whether I'm lying to your face. Officially named the Academy Award of Merit, the statuette is best known for its nickname Oscar. Was it named after Oscar Thomas, the first president of the Academy of Motion Pictures Arts and Sciences?
I mean, that just makes sense. So I'm going to go true.
It's false.
Oh, what?
I lied to your face.
Oh,
there was no
again?
Oscar Thomas. I don't even know if Oscar Thomas exists.
There wasn't even a guy called
Oscar
Thomas?
Someone was the first president of the Academy of Motion Pictures and Sciences, but it wasn't Oscar Thomas.
Oh.
But it is a nickname. So apparently...
Are you sure it wasn't Oscar Thomas?
I'm sure it wasn't Oscar Thomas. Well, all I know is it's based on the nickname of the Academy Awards librarian. Her name is Margaret Herrick. And she remarked that the statue looked like her uncle Oscar. Now, maybe his surname's Thomas. I didn't check that out. But the Academy Award librarian way back when said, it looks like my uncle Oscar. And so somehow they got picked up and got so far that it was officially the official nickname from 1939.
But I just want to clarify, you don't know the last name of her uncle.
I don't know
so
the last name.
So it could
name.
Be Oscar
so
Thomas.
So yes, you could
and
be.
And it could be kind of true.
I need to do my better false researching.
While we're actually looking forward to the rest of the show, just before you sort of get onto the show, if you're browsing around the internet, we actually have a review of The Revenant by myself on the Eternity website. So if you go to just Google Eternity newspaper, you'll find your way there. And all of the stuff, the deeper thoughts on The Revenant are available. Also, there's a great article in Eternity at the moment, The Best Medicine. I think this is a fantastic thing. Have a quick look at this. Hannah Boland is a comedian, and in her comedy routine, she treads a kind of a delicate tightrope of using humor as a tool to connect people who are hurting with belittling what they're going through. So without belittling what they're going through, sorry. So it's the whole idea of laughing at pain and how that's a medicine for people. She's debuting at the Melbourne International Comedy Festival in April. So it's a great article on Eternity there. Coming up on the show, we have just got so much for Oscar stuff to
Oscar
talk about.
Oscar bonkers,
the
I believe.
Fun stuff.
Mark?
I'm just not even going to list it.
Really?
Hang around. Hang around. Seriously, it's thrilling.
No, give us a hint?
Oh, okay. No.
Right. Stay tuned. Welcome back. Now, some films become famous just for the way they sound, like Superman, Star Wars, Frozen, which I know millions of parents wish that it hadn't done that, but come on, just face it, it has. So we thought the Academy Awards provided us with an opportunity to play an audio version of Spot That Film, or at least my good mate over here, Mark, thought it was another occasion to basically like shame me in front of everybody about my limited knowledge of song. Anyway, please continue, Mark,
that's
what you're
right.
about to subject me
that's
to.
That's exactly what I was out for.
Yes.
I was just thinking, public humiliation, what form can it take? There are five films that have been nominated for Best Original Score, and I'm going to get Ben to see if he can tell us which one's which. It's not that hard. Hey, want to play with us? Well, all you have to do is, you know, because of Ben's room for improvement scores in the past, I thought
we
I'd...
We have done this in the past. If you haven't heard the show in the past, go back and... Like last episode where I crashed and burned on epic scores.
I do believe you did fail to recognize The Lord of the Rings. So that was something. Okay,
yeah.
But look.
So I have room for improvement, as you just said.
Yeah, so we thought we would make it a little easier this time and actually give Ben the answers so that he can then match them. Okay, so what? These are the nominees, you know, for Bear's original score. Bridge of Spies.
Okay.
Carol.
Yes.
The Hateful Eight.
Mm.
Sicario. and Star Wars The Force Awakens. Okay.
Okay.
So, you know,
I might be a chance on this.
They're pretty distinct. Okay. So I'm all about helping you feel good about yourself in this segment. Okay. So why don't you play the first track for us? Now, no pressure. It's a slow builder.
Hang on a second.
Okay.
Sounds triumphant. Possibly, I want to go with Bridge of Spies.
You can still do this.
Can I say Carol?
Do you want to try something else?
Can I keep going towards Star Wars?
It is Star Wars. Hey! Well done. Don't you feel good about yourself? Okay, just move on to the next one. It should be pretty straightforward. Star Wars was a tough one, I admit. Say,
this time, Bridge of Spies?
I'm going to say we're traveling through the snow. It's a stagecoach.
You mean The Hateful Eight?
Yes, it's Yay! The Hateful Eight. Two for two.
All
well
right.
Done. Okay.
Let's try for this.
How are you going at home, by the way? Like, is this working for you? Sounds a bit... Dare I say Russian?
Sounds a bit what? I missed that bit. I missed what was that? What was the hint? What was the hint?
Sounds a bit Russian.
Oh, you mean like Das Bridge of Spies?
Yes, it's Bridge of Spies, you see. I'm pretty certain if you kept saying Bridge of Spies, you're going to get it right eventually. Okay.
All right, next
okay,
one.
Okay, two more nominees to go. Now, you've got what?
I really
got,
hope this
got,
is Carol.
You've got Carol and Sicario.
I really hope that. Oh, that's Sicario then.
You've got Carol. Or Sicario left.
I think I said Carol first and then went back on Sicario, but,
no, but I think
now
you
I'm
said,
back towards Carol.
Yes, and it's Carol and it's very good. See, and this is why these things work so well. Okay.
Should I play a bit more of Carol and then we'll get into the final one, which may or may not
may
start with an S.
Be. Oh, hang on. I think that might have been Sicario. sorry about that.
All right. Let's
okay, let's see. Now, you've only got one left, but let's see if we can match which one it is. Out of a total choice of Carol... Or none others.
Just give me a bit.
Give me a moment to think.
Yeah.
Now, again, I'll just list the ones you've got left.
Mm-hmm.
Carol. And that's it. So what do you think it might be?
I really want to say Carol, Mark.
Oh, you know, is that your final answer?
It is my final answer.
Okay, well, I've actually... you're correct. You see, and there you go. You got to 5 out of 5. And I've just thrown in a bonus track, which isn't a nominee, but I thought you'd enjoy it anyway.
Oh, let's
tell
check,
me if you know what this film is.
Let's check that out, then.
Seriously, 2 weeks running. Come
is
on.
It Lord of the Rings?
Yes, finally.
It really See? Sounds like Back to the Future.
Oh, gosh. Okay, for those wondering how often we do this segment, it's now every 6 months, if at all. Thanks for playing. Well, listen, one of the nominations for an Academy Award this year is a particular film that many people may not have heard of. Milestones are important to us, that sense of achieving, coming from doing something of substance. 45 Years is a film that hinges on a huge milestone, a couple celebrating 45 years of marriage. But this British drama isn't a celebration. Our second Now Showing segment for this special Oscar show presents the turmoil of a milestone not being built on what it should be, and how crucial honesty is to any long-term relationship.
Is it a shame not to have more photos around the house? I guess we didn't see the point of taking pictures of ourselves. It's a shame.
Come on.
What are you doing?
Come on.
I'm not prancing around in the living room at this time of night.
And this really is a great venue for an anniversary. So full of history, you see? Like a good marriage.
Kate and Jeff, Mark, are the lead characters in 45 Years, played by Charlotte Rampling, who's been nominated for an Academy Award for this film, and Jeff, Tom Courtney. And as you said in the intro, and as the title strongly suggests, they've been married for 45 years. And the film is set over the course of a week that's leading into their anniversary party for being married 45 years. They live in a small village in England. Something that happens on the Monday of that week, though, is some really quite devastating news shows up out of the blue that has an enormous effect, particularly on Kate, but also on Jeff as well. And on
obviously
their,
it goes to the heart of their marriage.
On their, wow, yeah, it really does. I don't think I'm going to say exactly what it is. It helps because more and more is revealed as the course of the film goes along. But this is really quite something of a powerful drama to go and check out at cinemas at the moment.
Well, look, there's a lot to be said about, you know, Oscar week. Why are we talking about 45 years? I mean, it's not exactly one of the contenders for best film.
No, it isn't. And really, Charlotte Rampling's Oscar nomination is pretty much the highest profile that this film is going to receive. But like other years in the Oscars, when you're heading into the ceremony itself, there's a lot of attention placed around the bigger films, and particularly those that get heaps of nominations, such as The Revenant that we talked about earlier in the show. But then there are often small films that get a nomination, usually quite deservedly, because if they're a small film, they don't tend to get a lot of attention with the Academy voters or with the public or even with critics necessarily. They can almost drift by and get unnoticed, even though they're a great film. And 45 Years is one of those small films, a little bit like Room this year at the Oscars as well, and a little bit like Spotlight, even though Spotlight's got slightly higher profile. But they're smaller, compacted dramas that the Academy from time to time gives a bit of attention to. I thought it would be great then to talk about 45 Years, because among the main contenders in the Best Actor, Actress categories, this might be one of those films where people just go, what? Like, yeah. Didn't even know that was at cinemas, let alone that this film existed.
Well, that's one of the best things about the Academy. I mean, my wife and I, when we watch the Academy Awards, we literally sit down with a piece of paper and a pencil and write down the, oh, must-sees. Like, oh, I'm going to do that.
I think 45 Years is definitely up there for that.
Okay, so Charlotte Rampling's the focus. What's it like being part of her life?
Yeah, being involved with her as Kate in this film, it's quite a demanding journey, really. It's not, you get a lot of glimpses of the positive side of their marriage and why this couple has been together for 45 years. It is fantastic that we're watching a drama about this subject. My wife Amy and I watched this. We've been married for a couple of years. I don't think we couldn't think of another movie that looked at an older couple, let alone one that had been married for so long, let alone one that attempts to demonstrate the positive parts of it and yet contrast it with the negative. So what it's like being part of Kate's life at this particular point, it seems like you're experiencing her life in the worst week, entirely the worst week. Charlotte Rampling is fantastic at carrying the weight of a woman who discovers that possibly her life is built on a lie. And that's like devastating news. If you got that in any point in your life, you'd be devastated, let alone being able to witness that in somebody else. So Charlotte Rampling does the emotional highs and lows. She's a great, dignified actress. She's almost like the lesser-known version of Helen Mirren, I think, Charlotte Rampling. She's been around since forever, early 60s. Her first film was A Hard Day's Night, the Beatles film. She's been around since then. Does a tremendous job as a woman carrying the weight on her shoulders of thinking that possibly her marriage just is a bit of a sham.
So what's the tipping point morally for the film? What's like you're talking about truth and you're talking about the potential of lies to tip things over. Is there a moral point in which it really, the whole film hinges?
Yeah, there's probably a few of them, actually. Like, there's this catalyst right at the start that does involve her husband, and concealment is probably a good word to describe what's going on. Tom Courtney's quite strong in this film. He's a little bit hard to understand at times. He almost mumbles a bit of his way through. In contrast, though, with Charlotte Rampling, she gets the lion's share of what's going on here. And so the tipping points in the drama are often when she discovers more about what's happened in the past and then how this could potentially affect your life now. And it caused Amy and I to have a great discussion about our own marriage. And I'm a person who can struggle sometimes to give all the information that I probably should. I'm not necessarily trying to lie. I'm trying to filter, and I think I'm protecting Amy from things, but often she wants to know the full story. And 45 years is a fantastic demonstration of, and some of the things I'm talking about in my own life aren't as nearly as great as what goes on in this film. But it reminds you that truth and honesty are integral to any strong relationship. It's no wonder that God and his son Jesus go on so much about honesty, and Jesus is the way, the truth, and the life, for goodness sake. Like, there's a big fundamental reason why being open and honest in communication, particularly in intimate relationships, is called for. 45 years is a very powerful reminder of that. If from the negative, which is when this comes to light, if it does come to light, it can have enormous devastating effects, particularly on what you thought your relationship was. And in Tom Corley, in the Jeff's defense in the film, I don't think he's a terrible guy, and I think he does actually love his wife. But by the end of the film, there's this devastating scene where you see Charlotte Rampling wrestling with everything that she's gone through in the film as Kate. And she is still at this precipice of, I don't know whether it was all a sham or not. I think it's that lack of integrity and the ability to not know for certain would suggest why you should go towards certainty and truth and honesty from the kickoff.
Wow, and the opposite just honeycombs everything, doesn't it? Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Okay, well, look, 45 Years Start Charlotte Rampling and Tom Courtney, now showing mainly at smaller cinema chains, though, so you'll have to search around for a bit. It's rated M for coarse language and a sex scene. Yes, older people still have sex, so that might be the most disturbing thing in it.
Yeah, it's they don't show too much, but it's definitely in the movie. A big supporter of our show, Mark, is Insights magazine and website. Go to insights.uca.au, and check out their reviews of all the various Oscar-nominated films. The Revenant, Big Short, Room, Steve Jobs is all across Insights right now. Check it out.
Okay. And also, if there's other sorts of stuff that you'd like to find out about film, we think a great place to look would be the bigpicturewebsite.com, which is actually the URL, thebigpicturewebsite.com.
Awesome URL.
Go there, you'll find past shows, you'll find videos, additional stuff. You'll also find the longer version of the show, because we often do extra stuff which doesn't make the cut. You subscribe to the podcast and you get all the juicy bits.
The juicier bits,
which couldn't possibly go to air. Okay.
Still to come on the show, Mark and I are going to predict. We are going to tell you who are going to win the major Academy Awards this year. Stick around. Welcome back to the Oscars special of The Big Picture. And this is the moment in the show where we're going to unveil to each other and everybody else who we think, nay, who is going to win the big awards tomorrow at the Oscars. Mark, let's start with Best Supporting Actor. I believe, as I rustle, opening the envelope, the winner is, according to you, Sylvester Stallone for Creed.
Yeah, no, it's true. There's a bunch of people who've been nominated, like Christian Bale's in there for The Big Short, Tom Hardy for Revenant, Mark Ruffalo for Spotlight, but I think it should be Sylvester Stallone. And I know that anybody who's seen Sylvester Stallone act will say, what? Okay, but yes, this time he actually reprises a role, like from the original Rocky film, and it just nails it.
It also could be one of those career achievement awards too.
Yeah, let's be honest, the Academy Awards do that a lot. They just go, you've been around for a while, you won't go away.
And we're going to revisit that topic very soon.
Hang on. So you've nominated Mark Rylance from Bridge of Spies.
Yes.
As best supporting actor.
Yes, I think he is a bit of an underrated talent, I think, Mark Rylance. He was terrific.
He plays the spy
in Bridge of Spies. I thought every scene that he was in, he owned. He was the most memorable out of all the nominees for me.
Because Tom Hanks could still have been the guy from Castaway.
That's exactly right. Most memorable for me. That's why I tipped him. So, Mark, you're wrong. Mark Rylance is going to win.
Okay, well, let's see if we can't find some uniformity. Best Supporting Actress. Now, The Hateful Eight is in there. Carol, Spotlight, The Danish Girl, Steve Jobs, and I have picked from The Hateful Eight. No, you have picked from The Hateful Eight, Jennifer Jason Leigh.
Which you have also.
I know, and that's the thing. I love you.
What was your reasoning?
Well, look, because she just, it was such a performance for Jennifer Jason Leigh, I just felt disgusted the entire time looking at her. So if that was what she was trying to get, a strong emotional reaction from the audience, she got it from me. You can have an award.
Yeah, I just think she was the biggest whirlwind on screen of actual acting, and talk about everything from just power to disgustingness. That's what she packed into that role in a far more, like, a way that's going to sear into your brain more than anybody else that's
exactly
listed
it's
here.
It's like, I mean, I don't like, anybody who knows me knows I'm not a big fan of Quentin Tarantino. But she was the most memorable actress. There's no doubt about that.
Actually think that it's most likely to go to Rooney Mara in Carol, or a perennial favourite, Kate Winslet for Steve Jobs. But I'm with you. I think Jennifer Jason Leigh should win.
That's the sort of thing. It's kind of like, has Kate had one lately? We should give Kate one.
She was just walking past us.
Let's get on to the biggies.
Best actor.
Not to diminish all those other performances.
No, which you just did.
Best lead actor.
According to you is... Spared no expense on the envelope sound effects. Leonardo DiCaprio for The Revenant. Oh, Mark, what a surprise.
And the reason why I do it is because it is the Lifetime Achievement Award.
Because he has not won an Oscar, has he?
No, and that's the tricky thing. And in fact, he came so close in the year that he actually got nominated for Blood Diamond, but basically got his opportunity harpooned by the fact that he also got the release of The Departed.
DiCaprio.
And that's basically, that's what you
DiCaprio
can't have,
foiling DiCaprio.
Yeah, you can't have two good films the same year. So I feel like there's been a lot of that. He didn't get it for The Aviator. A lot of people are just going to go, oh, Leo.
He's due.
It's time.
He is due. A bit like, I think it was the most recent example of that, the one for Denzel Washington for Training Day, which I thought was a fantastic film, but it did seem like...
It was more like, you've done all this other stuff.
We neglected you that time. Oh, there was that other time. Here you go then, champ.
Why don't you have an award?
Yes.
Okay, now you
what
have
do I reckon?
Down, I'm scanning through here, and out of all the different things you could have picked of these big films of the year, The Martian, The Revenant, The Danish Girl, you've gone with Steve Jobs and Michael Fassbender playing the title role.
Yes. Yes, I think he's... Yeah,
no, I'm only laughing with you.
At you. For the simple reason that I think his performance is far more acting required than what Leonardo DiCaprio did in The Revenant.
It's
as
true.
Much as I think DiCaprio deserves an Oscar.
He only had to lie in ice and be eaten
by a
bear.
He had to lie and grow a beard. Whereas Steve Jobs, Michael Fassbender had to encapsulate Steve Jobs in more of a portrait, a perspective of a man. And I thought he did a fantastic job of doing that, showing the charisma, the vulnerability, the volatileness, the smugness, all of that. I thought Fassbender was great. He deserves it.
Now, let's be clear though. He's not going to get it, is he?
He isn't, but he should.
He should.
Okay, so we're up to Best Actress.
Okay, Best Actress. Now, nominees, Cate Blanchett for Carol, Brie Larson for Room, Jennifer Lawrence for Joy, Charlotte Rampling, 45 Years, Saoirse Ronan. Oh, now, I always get that. How do you say it? Saoirse Ronan for Brooklyn.
Show some respect.
I will. And you have nominated Brie Larson for The Room, and you feel like she's a dead set.
I don't think she's a dead set. I'm thinking more likely is Cate Blanchett for Carol, but go back to the bit of Michael Fassbender for Steve Jobs. I think the most deserving winner out of all of those that you read out there is Brie Larson. Again, similar reasons like Jennifer Jason Leigh. I talk about a performance that actually sticks in your mind, and I think she had to embody something very powerful and palpable and vulnerable, fragile, all at the same time. And Brie Larson did that, and she's an actress that hardly any of us know. But she smashed it in Room. And I also think that her co-star, Jacob Tremblay, was robbed for not getting a Best Actor nod.
He didn't
get
the nomination. That's kind of weird.
This is a great opportunity to just say what we think about what was going on. Anyway, okay. I should go jump quickly to who do you think? Brie Larson, The Room.
I do. And for every reason you've said. And also because the Academy loves to be one of those moments where we discovered someone. Like Brie Larson had no career before then. we discovered Brie. And here's an Academy. And I think it's almost become a sport snubbing Cate Blanchett.
So she has been a bit snubbed, although she has won in the past for The Aviator for Best Supporting Actress. But in honor of who we think will win the Best Actress Oscar tomorrow, here's a bit of Brie Larson from The Room.
Jack, listen to me. This is our chance.
Thank you for letting us do this interview. We're grateful to hear your story.
Thank you to everyone who sent their good thoughts and their prayers.
Hey, do you know what we're going to do today?
What?
We are going to bake a birthday cake.
Brie Larson from The Room. Look, if you haven't seen that film, really well should be on your
room
list.
Room is so
write
good.
It down. People with pencil and paper are sitting there going for ideas. That's one. Okay, list still coming up. We've got the big awards. We've got the best director, best film. Hang around for that. You've got to see what we think's coming up.
Welcome back to our Oscar special as Mark and I predict who will win.
The future.
The future.
Tomorrow.
The future of awards tomorrow. We're up to best animated film category. Before we get on to best director and best picture, the nominees, Mark, are Anomalisa, Boy and the World, Inside Out, Shaun the Sheep Movie, and When Marnie Was There. And according to you, when the envelope opens tomorrow, the winner will be When Marnie Was There, the Studio Ghibli latest release.
Now, there's a reason why I've said this.
And the reason is what?
I don't think it's going to win, but it
I think it definitely will
it
not
should.
Win.
It's a really, really good Studio Ghibli release. If you haven't ever discovered Studio Ghibli stuff, go have a look at When Marnie Was There. But I want it to win more because I don't want something else to win. And look at your
winner... What do you
winner,
think that will be?
You're saying that the best animation tomorrow will be Inside Out. And you're probably right.
Yes, this is one where, unlike the actors and actress categories we were talking about before, where I did go with some choices that I think probably won't win, but I really want them to. On this occasion, I just think Inside Out's going to win, even though I wasn't a huge fan of the film.
No.
I'm not as big a fan of film as a lot of people are. How about you?
I'm an anti-fan.
Anti-fan?
Like, I feel like...
Can you get even like stronger than anti-fan?
Yes, I mean, you've heard of anti-heroes. I'm the anti-fan. I stand out the front of cinemas going, boo, boo, go away. Look, Inside Out will win because... it's what adults think a children's film should be. You know,
but not this adult over here.
It's not what kids like. So, like, the all the sorts of well-minded hubris that came out of this sort of the reviews of these films were all about how wonderful it would be for kids to pay attention to stuff like this, to how bad it was in comparison to stuff like, you know, Despicable Me. And yet, the truth is... this just doesn't play for kids. This is playing so strongly for adults and the lessons that kids should learn that it really just leaves kids behind.
Wow, yeah. I thought we were doing an Oscar prediction show, but and instead just it's just really, you ranting just about Inside it. Out. That's why okay. You wanted to talk so about best animated film.
Yes, so Inside Out will probably win.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, what's next?
Okay, look, before we get on to the biggie, so yeah, hang around, we're going to do Best Director and Best Film Yet. Best Adapted Screenplay. Now, this was one where I insisted we put this award
there in. There was insisting.
Because I basically, I'm very, very interested in adaptation. As a scriptwriter, I want to see who can take something that's really cool, like a book or a comic or even sometimes a song, and turn it into a film. Video games, you know, who can jump the divide?
And it makes you feel good because you often read the book before
I
the movie comes out.
I always read the book, and if I don't make this part of the show, I can't actually make it a tax deduction. So, look, the nominees were The Big Short, Brooklyn, Carol, The Martian, and Room, all of which were based on books and previous productions. And so you nominated that The Martian, and which I think is...
And you... agree.
Yes, because The Martian is brilliant. But why did you think so?
Because you told me that the book was good. You told me the book was really good, and so did other people. And yeah. That suggested, apart from a few things that dropped out along the way, such as God, apart from that, The Martian was a really good encapsulation of that book. And I haven't heard people talking up any of the other novels that the other nominees are based on.
The classic thing is, look, if you're one of those people who likes to sort of read around things or look around things, The Martian's actually a brilliant book. The Martian, the film, is also a brilliant film, which is a rare thing to occur. Normally one spoils the other. You could watch, read them in tandem and just have a great time.
Okay, we're up to Best Director before we get to Best Picture, which is like what happens on the night, isn't it, with the Oscars? This is a lot like the Oscars.
No, I'm wearing my favourite frock.
That's why I'm wearing a T-shirt that's got some buttons on it around the neck.
Oh, wow, classy.
I thought I'd dress up for the occasion. For Best Director, now the nominees are Tom McCarthy for Spotlight, Alejandro G. Iñárritu for The Revenant. Who else is up? Adam McKay for The Big Short, George Miller, Mad Max, Fury Road, and Lenny Abrahamson for Room. And you are suggesting Mr. Iñárritu for The Revenant, which would mean that he would be the third director in history to win back-to-back Oscars, because he won last year for directing Birdman, which also won Best Picture. Only two other directors have done this in history, John Ford and John L. Mankiewicz, and that was way back in the 40s.
Yeah,
so not for like 60 or 70 years has this been done, and you're suggesting it will happen.
I'm basically saying they're going to thumb their nose at Spielberg and give it to Alejandro.
Yeah.
So I feel like Spielberg's not up.
He's
for
not even nominated. He already got spurned.
I just meant that, you know, this is kind of like you know, there are really obvious directors who've done fantastic films who do really well at the box office who never get Academy Awards, and you know, Spielberg so has had one.
But Iñárritu is a great director.
He's a brilliant director.
And directors very interesting, and fascinating, Revenant, and films that cut through as well, even though they're kind of weird and art housey.
And the Revenant is a brilliant film, and I sort of feel like this is one of those ones where there are other really worthy contenders. You could almost go any way, and yet I think this is what the industry is probably going to do.
Or is that what I think?
No, you don't.
In fact, I do not.
So look at yours. I think you're going to hand it to the director of Spotlight, Tom McCarthy.
Yes, because I think his handling of a really explosive, controversial, potential hysterical subject matter was handled fantastically well. Mm. And I think he had a much more difficult task than Iñárritu. Although saying that, the vision that Iñárritu brings to the screen in Revenant is very difficult to beat, but it's the same case you could make for George Miller with Mad Max Fury Road. But I think Tom McCarthy pulled together all the elements of great cinema, from cast to script to camera work, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I love the way you say not a potentially hysterical subject. He turns into a really thoughtful person.
Yeah, I think Tom McCarthy is an underrated talent as well, a bit like Mark Rylance in Bridge of Spies, and deserves more notice.
Okay, so let's move on then to Best Film.
Ooh.
May I have the sound effect, please?
You may.
I wish we had the envelope.
Saved it for last.
Okay. So the nominees this year for Best Film are The Big Short, Bridge of Spies, Brooklyn, Mad Max Fury Road, The Martian, The Revenant, Room, Spotlight, and pretty much any other film that was released last year. I mean, the lists just go on and on and on. And to be honest, there's not a bad film on this list.
No, it's quite a mixed list too.
So looking at what you nominated, you have gone for, well, you know, the Cold War spy favourite, Bridge of Spies.
Yeah, even though it
couldn't
apparently...
Couldn't beat the soundtrack.
Even though it couldn't beat the soundtrack. And also, the Academy Awards couldn't pick that it actually had a director, so Steven Spielberg didn't get nominated for it, but they thought they'd chuck his film in as Best Picture. Yeah, I just thought, out of everything last year, and despite what I just said about Spotlight, I thought Bridge of Spies just encapsulated what Hollywood often loves about movies, and what I do too as a moviegoer. It was great mainstream but thoughtful entertainment, and a kind of old world movie but with new world techniques, all that sort of stuff. I thought all that came together in Bridge of Spies. It stood out for me,
and possibly one of the most spiritual films of the year too, in terms of like as a great strong Christian parallel. If you haven't seen Bridge of Spies and the struggle one man goes through to continue to do what he believes, as opposed when other people are telling him to be different, gee, that's one you should do. My nomination went in
is,
a different direction.
It is Mad Max Fury. No, it's The Martian. Oh, but I'm not terribly surprised given how much you like the film. Do you honestly think it will get up?
No, I don't.
Do you think The Revenant's going to do it?
The Revenant's going to take it. But look, so I actually thought, you know why I included
also think
The
that
Martian?
Too.
Because The Martian is a brilliant film, and actually the book even tips a little. The book is even better. But look, The Martian is a brilliant film. Ridley Scott has done a great job directing it. Matt Damon, you know, does a fantastic performance. I watched it again the other night with my wife. She loved it. But you know why I'm picking it? Because I just want to draw attention to the fact that it is the only film of the films nominated, it is the only one from 2015 that actually features in the top 10 box office winners of 2015.
Mad Max Fury Road didn't get up there?
No, it doesn't.
Right.
And that's the thing. You know, like there are 9 other films, because The Martian's at number 10 on the box office performing films. Think about that, people. It's actually something well worth keeping in mind. I talk to people all the time about film, and they, you know, they say to me as they come out, oh, you know, it's like, I don't really know film. I just go and watch what I like. That's not a bad indicator of what is a good film if you're prepared to hand over money for
it. Apart from Inside Out.
Okay, apart from Inside Out, which was rubbish. But you've got basically a lot of films nominated this year that really didn't do well at the box office. So just remember, don't feel inferior to the Academy Awards. They're the critics' choices. Star Wars was the big performer for last year. Jurassic World was. Furious 7 was. Who knows what was going on there. But you know what I'm saying? It's like a little respect for the audience who actually paid.
Okay, so we're about to show some respect to The Martian by playing a little something from it.
I guarantee you that at some point, everything's going to go south on you. Now, you can either accept that, or you can get to work.
Get to work. Go grab out The Martian. You really should watch it. That's fantastic. Okay, look, still coming up, finally, the thing you really have been hanging on.
Not for all the Oscar predictions and all the reviews of Oscar movies, no?
The top 5 Oscar crimes that have been perpetrated over the last decade or so. I'll tell you what they are.
And the winner is you. Welcome back to the Oscar special of The Big Picture.
Because you tuned in.
2016.
Well done, you. In fact, everybody who's listening can come to Hope. We'll give you the address at the end of the show, and we've got a personal statuette for you.
We may or may not have one of those.
That may or may not be true.
But everyone's been talking about these little gold statuettes because they don't just grip the attention of those in the movie industry, do they, Mark? The rest of us seem to love them as well, because Oscar wins usually translate into real ticket sales. More people this week, if, let's say, The Revenant wins loads of awards, lots of people are going to go see it. So this week for our What the Bible Has to Say segment, we asked Big Picture regular and Bible Society Australia's CEO Greg Clark to give us a higher perspective on trophies.
Do you not know that in a race, all the runners run, but only one gets the prize? Run in such a way as to get the prize. That's from the letter to the Corinthian church that Paul wrote. And don't you think that kids these days get a really mixed message when it comes to competition? On the one hand, they're told to try their hardest, strive to be their best, and to win against all the odds. But on the other hand, they're told not to stick their heads out too far and give others a chance, and look, remember your place. It's very confusing. Are we competitive or egalitarian? Is it first past the post or the first shall be last? I think society at large is very confused about competitiveness. We love our sport and we love to win. I mean, what self-respecting Australian doesn't want to see the English cricket team writhing in pain after another dismal defeat at our hands? But we also know that there is something just a bit inhumane about competitiveness too. We sense that it would be better if everyone had some success, and we cheer when the most unlikely people win a race. Aussies love a winner, but we love to see the underdog get up too. Well, the Bible is very practical about these confusing matters. Our Bible passage from Corinthians tells us at least three very helpful things about competitiveness, and these should help us keep a clear head about it. First, trying to win is all about discipline, and that's a good thing. Training, testing yourself, pushing yourself, they're all part of self-control, and that's something the Bible describes as a spiritual quality. So it's good to push yourself hard, especially for the things that matter. And elsewhere, Paul says to us that physical training is good, but spiritual training is even better. Secondly, there's nothing wrong with wanting to win. Sometimes in our quest for humility, we make it seem like winning doesn't matter, but it really does. And it's really great to have that crown sitting on your head. Where Christian competitiveness should be distinct is in celebrating not just our own victories, but those of everyone else as well. In one sense, we're all running a different race, and we can all will each other on to win it. And lastly, this is no ordinary prize that Paul is talking about. Normal conditions do not apply here. The prize the Bible's talking about isn't a trophy, it's not a medal, it isn't even an Academy Award. We're talking about eternal life here. The Apostle Paul goes on in 1 Corinthians to say that he beats his body into shape to win this prize. He knows that everything is on the line. Paul gets it, but do we? Are we fighting hard for the things that matter? Or are we wasting our efforts on crowns that will not last?
This week in our top five section, we're going to look at top films to take your parents to your parents' house for a long weekend. We're not actually going to do it.
Don't you think that's one worth saving?
Maybe we should say that. Okay. But come on, like for this, this is Oscars week. We're going to be looking at the Academy Awards, of course, and we've been celebrating a fair bit through this show, haven't we, Mark? It's time really to remember as we almost conclude the big picture for this week to get on more of a somber note. Actually, more of it won't be. It'll be somber as I'm speaking because you're about to build up to something. Because this is where we remember that Oscar isn't perfect. No, actually, Oscar can be just plain old wrong at times. So, without further ado, I hand over to Mark because he's going to give us the top five Oscar crimes and the winners.
The moments were in which I stood up in the lounge room and almost kicked the television over. The point in which I stomped out into the started screaming incoherently at
We've
the
neighbors. We've all been there.
Not real words, just sound. You know, things like that, because they'd just done what they'd done. Let me start by just telling you the fifth worst thing. And I'm going to do this in time-based things. In 1998, there was a little award called Best Actress in a Leading Role. And now, basically,
a little award
I like to call Best Actress.
Thank you.
The Academy Awards, this time, it basically gave us a real sort of view of what America's view of the world is. Because, picture it if you can, these are the sorts of things they had up. You know, Meryl Streep was up for yet another nomination. Why not?
Yes.
She'd get every second one. Emily Watson was in there. And then you had the two big contenders, Cate Blanchett for Elizabeth, which is a phenomenal film about English history and the first Queen Elizabeth and the ultimate role she played in history, and Gwyneth Paltrow for Shakespeare in Love. And so as
just trying to remember who won that year.
As we're all waiting for Kate to go up and take her statuette, someone mistakenly reads out Gwyneth Paltrow's name. She gets up and gives the most inane speech possible, and why not? Because she
would have been as shocked as what else.
Who would think that Shakespeare in Love? But of course, this is America's view of history. I'm not trying to insult Americans per se, but as a general thing, that was crazy.
I am amazed that that's only number five. That is the first Oscar crime I think of. That's only number five.
There are many, many more.
Four.
For example, let's go to Best Picture 2002. Now, again, just recapping, some amazing things going on here. We've got Gangs of New York that's been nominated. Or how about The Hours for like that incredible insight into the female mind spread across, you know, basically four decades.
The one that Nicole Kidman won the Best Actress for.
Or that little ditty, The Lord of the Rings. You know, it's just... Or
we've mentioned that once or twice on this program earlier.
If you want to be highbrowed, there was The Pianist, okay? Roman Polanski and the Holocaust.
Didn't that win that year? It didn't.
No, because you could have big issues or you could go with big dance numbers. So let's give it to Chicago.
Why Chicago win?
Why would we worry about thinking about the Holocaust? Why would we talk about some of the biggest epic books of all times? Why would we even worry about America's own history or women?
Are women in Chicago?
Where there were, and if you want to compare how women are prepared in Chicago versus women in The Hours.
I was not drawing a comparison, just merely mentioning.
Let's give the award to Chicago. Of course, that's nothing compared to Best Actor in a Leading Role for 2006. And this was basically the greatest robbery of all time for a personal actor. Okay, I don't know how the studios
How is this not at number one? Keep going. Sorry to cut you off.
There are worse things to come, trust me. Okay, basically, this was supposed to be Leonardo DiCaprio's year, okay, because he'd done Blood Diamond, but then he'd also done, by a different studio, The Departed. Okay, now these were searing roles, fantastic roles, probably the best acting that Leonardo DiCaprio has done in a decade, and they both came out in the same year.
We mentioned this earlier when we were talking about The Revenant, and you're saying that effectively he diluted himself, DiCaprio.
He didn't, because this is what happens, right? Studios are not concerned with basically what was the best actor. They're thinking about the dollars that are attached to an Oscar.
It's about dollars, Mark?
So the competing firms get to business.
Goodness.
They're putting all sorts of gifting out there, also it actually raised into the headlines all sorts of things that, you know, the Oscar voters could actually get for voting. I'm not saying there's direct bribery, but there's a lot of influence going on.
And we should point out that the Oscar is actually voted by members of the Academy who are industry members. They have to be invited.
Got to be invited. There's 6,000 in total,
and they're spread across director, actor, right through to cinematography.
97% of whom are Caucasian. And the male percentage is something like 78%.
Right.
So this is not like a balanced crowd by any means. But basically what you've got, The Departed was an incredible film. Why was it? Look, Mark Wahlberg got Best Supporting Role. It was the best film, the best picture for 2006. But because the studios couldn't make up their mind about just going, oh, look, your film's better than mine, Leonardo DiCaprio's nomination for Blood Diamond just got swamped. Gone.
Okay.
And instead, they gave it to Forest Whitaker for The Last King of Scotland, which was not bad, but I've just got to say, there you go.
Oh, so the crime is just the fact that DiCaprio didn't win.
Well, it should have. It's just ridiculous.
He should have got two statues by the sounds.
He should have stood up there. They should have gone, let's do a joint thing. For The Blood Diamond and The Departed, we're going to give you one. Or here's one for each. You know, bookends.
Two.
But... this is where I really get annoyed, because I'm just up till now I've just been tame.
Oh,
now I'm saying the best.
That was just pleasant rant.
The best animated feature film in 2009 shows just how incredibly biased the Academy can be towards the big studio film versus, say, the much more independent or sort of side film, which is much, much better by comparison. Now this is for parents who are looking for kids films. There are all sorts of great kids films out that year. Coraline was out, The Princess and the Frog, The Secret of Kells, and there were two big contenders. You know, one of the best children's films ever made was Fantastic Mr. Fox by Wes Anderson.
Yeah, that was a cracker.
Incredible.
Do you think the kids like it as much as adults?
They do. My kids are thrilled. They dance around and watch it. They name the characters they want to be. It's, you know, it's a great film. They love it.
Just want to be Mr. Fox, right?
They do. No, actually, some of them want to be. Anyway, let's not get into it.
Yes.
But this is where the studio film, you know, I even think, shall we give it, okay, to... a film that is basically innovative and incredible to watch and beautiful for adults and for kids and based on an incredible book and, you know, Roald Dahl, sort of one of his masterworks and all that sort of stuff. Or why don't we just give it to a story about a pensioner whose house floats away? Yes, Up is this year. It was 2009's animated feature film. The classic case of the film appreciated by adults but not by kids. The perfect example of the studio machine mix-up where it's more likely to be a McDonald's, you know, Happy Meal than it is to be actually a big win with kids. You know, it was just a classic case of... You know, we've got a great voiceover artist. We've got great writers. This is another one for Pixar. Hey, hey, let's do Up.
Wow. So that's slotting in at number two.
Now that's a crime.
And we've already had Shakespeare in Love, so I'm pretty baffled now about what you can actually pick for number one. So here goes.
One.
Surprise us.
This took me years to get over it. I'm not over it now.
And you get over things so well, Mark. As we learned by other top five lists in the past. Go to thebigpicturewebsite.com. Check out some of the other top fives Mark's done on the podcast. Whoa.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not a guy
past.
Who holds on to a grudge.
No, Mark.
The best picture is a coveted award. There's no doubt. There have been some crimes in the past. You know, where something weird jumps over really amazing things. Like, you know, you could look at last year, for example, to be honest. 2014, when Birdman was a worthy film, but was it better than Boyhood, The Imitation Game, Selma, The Theory of Everything, Whiplash? No, it wasn't. Okay, so strange things happen.
But that's not the number one.
Nothing stranger than 2012, okay, where we've got... Okay, let's just think about this. Les Miserables. Okay, brilliant, incredible achievement in terms of film and music. Okay, fine. Or Life of Pi. I'll just say the title again. Life of Pi was an amazing film, an incredible film.
I won't interrupt your rant by saying I think that was overrated.
Thank
and not
you
that
very
great.
Much.
But keep Don't going interrupt. With Life of Pi.
Silver Linings Playbook then. Zero Dark Thirty. Okay, or Lincoln. Okay, if you're going to go for epic, go for Lincoln. And here's a bunch of films that you could nominate. Django Unchained, which I don't even like. Okay, Django Unchained was got so raved about in 2012. What do we give it to? Argo. Ben Affleck, you're a criminal.
Now, Mark, you should point out a little bit more about Argo, because I know we've talked about this film before, but I don't know if you've raised it on the Big Picture previously.
Here's the problem
a lot
with
of people
Argo.
Liked that movie. It was very popular at cinemas and with a lot of critics too. What's your bugbear? Why is it number one on the Oscar
because
crimes
it passed
list?
Because it itself off as a true story and was a basic fabrication of what... And I'm trying to say that people weren't smuggled out of Iran during the revolution.
Which is what Argo's about.
I'm trying to say that the Americans stole the credit for what the Canadians did. Basically, and Ben Affleck so messed up this storyline. I mean, the Canadians were the brave people, but they couldn't be because they're Canadian. So, you know, and it's an American film and we're paying the dollars. So he so rewrote this storyline and inserted himself in it as a Mexican. Okay, I mean, come on. You know, that he was so completely messed this up that in the end, the Canadian government, you know, ordered an official protest to be presented, and he had to change the tagline of the film to say not only, you know, what a great moment this was for the CIA, but what a great moment of cooperation it was for the Canadian. Yeah. Cooperation? Yeah.
That's right. Well done, little Canada.
You took the credit. Like, well done. So to me, it is one of those moments where you go, if you're going to play with the words true story, better make sure it is.
Wow, what a note to finish. Like, our
I'm just going
to
sit down over here with my fan and glass of water now. Just
a note to finish our show on that we're, as we said right at the top of this top five list, it was quite the celebration. And now I'm about to play something from Argo where I better turn your microphone off because you're very likely to scream at the screen.
You're going to do a $20 million Star Wars ripoff. You need somebody who's a somebody, somebody respectable.
Audio from, according to Mark, the biggest crime in Oscar history awarded to Argo, and you're also giving it a big award at the end of our Oscars show for this week. Thanks for joining. It's been great.
It's been great
to
fun.
Predict what's going to happen tomorrow.
And so I'm pretty cathartic
sure
too.
If you go back over the show, when you listen to this podcast, when you check it out on thebigpicturewebsite.com, when you go back over it, you'll see that we were right about the Oscars this year, the 88th Oscars. We were right. But that was this week. Coming up next week, Mark, what are we going to do?
Well, the Big Picture gets epic with Gods of Egypt and Hail Caesar.
The Lady in the Van challenges us all about loving our neighbor.
And top five epic quotes from epics. I mean, it's going to be epic.
It's going to be an epic program. I would still like to thank the Academy, and I'm Ben McKechnie.
And I've been Mark Hadley. Look forward to seeing you next week.
The Big Picture is a Bible Society Australia production, sharing the light of God's word into every corner of your world.